Good afternoon. I'd like to call the Oro Valley Town Council regular and study session to order. Mr. Standish, if you would take roll call.
Vice Mayor Barrett. Councilmember Jones Ivy. Councilmember Nicholson. Councilmember Pena.
Here.
Councilmember Rodman.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
Mayor Winfield.
Here.
Mike, I am here. Joyce Jones Ivy.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Josh was logging in. He just stuck his head into my office. Why don't we just give him a minute? And the vice mayor will not be joining us this evening. Let me check in his office and see if he somehow maybe logged into the executive session.
Yeah, and Mr. Mayor?
Yes?
We just also want to make sure that he is showing up as his name. If he's showing up under a different name, we wouldn't know to enable him.
Okay. I'll find out. He and Gary were logged into the executive session, so Josh is going to log into this regular session. And he is, Chuck, using his town computer, so it will be his name.
Thank you for checking, Mr. Mayor.
So there he is. Does he need to unmute himself, or does he need to be unmuted?
There, it should be.
Okay, all right. So we've taken roll call, Councilmember Nicholson. I move to go into executive session with the town manager, assistant town manager, town attorney, legal services director, and the town clerk. I need a second.
Second that.
Okay, Councilmember Jones-Ivey's provided the second. Mr. Standish, would you do a roll call vote, please?
Sure. Vice Mayor Barrett? Councilmember Jones-Ivey?
Here.
Councilmember Mickelson?
Here.
Councilmember Pena?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodman?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon?
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield?
Yes. And so just as a reminder that you'll need to exit this regular session and join in the private executive session Zoom meeting. Thank you. Okay, I think we can go ahead and reconvene the Oro Valley Town Council regular and study session for September 2nd, 2020. Mr. Standish, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett? Councilmember Jones-Ivey?
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Here.
Councilmember Pena?
Here.
Councilmember Rodman?
Here.
Councilmember Solomon?
Here.
And Mayor Winfield?
Here. Thank you, Mr. Standish. We'll pause for a moment while the flag video is displayed on the screen. Once the flag video is displayed, Councilmember Solomon will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic of which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Councilmember Solomon and others who joined. Okay, Mr. Standish, upcoming meeting announcements.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Public Safety Personnel Retirement System Board will hold a regular session on September 8th at 2 p.m. via Zoom. The Historic Preservation Commission will be holding their regular session on September 8th at 5 p.m. via Zoom. Then the Planning and Zoning Commission will be holding a special session on September 8th at 6 p.m. via Zoom. The Water Utility Commission will then hold a regular session on September 14th at 5 p.m. via Zoom. Then the Budget and Finance Commission will be holding their regular session on September 15th at 4 p.m. via Zoom. The Parks and Recreation Advisory Board will hold a regular session on September 15th at 6 p.m. via Zoom. And then the Town Council's next regular session will be on September 16th at 6 p.m. and that will be held via Zoom as well. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. Council reports this evening.
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Member Jones-Ivey.
Thank you very much. I just want to acknowledge that today was the last day Linda Culver, our executive assistant, has retired. And I just want to thank her for her 10 years of service and wish her well in retirement. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other council reports? I'll just mention, I learned just before our council meeting this evening that Vice Mayor Barrett was injured in a bike accident. Oh. May have broken her wrist, was being taken to the hospital. She was going to be joining us this evening, but of course is not able to do that. So keep her in your thoughts. Ms. Jacobs, Town Manager Report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. As you know, we've been working on the rollout of the town's business assistance program over the past several months. And you may recall that the town council approved $1 million set aside in the budget to assist our local businesses for the current fiscal year. Assistant Town Manager Chris Cornelison has been leading that effort. And I've asked him to provide a brief overview on where we are in this program and campaign that we're now calling OB Safe Steps. So with that, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to call on Mr. Cornelison for a brief overview.
Thank you.
Thank you, Town Manager Jacobs. Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of council. So as Mary mentioned, we wanted to provide just a brief overview of the business assistance program, OB Safe Steps. And certainly, as she mentioned, it's certainly with appreciation of all of your efforts, and our business community has echoed just as much. They recognize your leadership and support in approving that $1 million and supporting our small business communities. I also wanted to thank some key staff members. It's not just me. It's a handful, well, more than a handful of folks, such as J.J. Johnson, Margie Adler, Chuck Boyer, Misty Nowak, Dave Gephardt, and, of course, a few others. And, of course, the guidance and leadership of Mary Jacobs. And certainly, I really want to recognize Dave Perry, the Chamber of Commerce, as well as his colleagues, as they have been a crucial partner in this effort. So thank you, Dave, and the Chamber. So in revealing OB Safe Steps, our tagline for the program is healthy community, healthy economy. And if Mr. Lunny will pull up that slide, attaches a seal and window cling that showcases the OB Safe Steps graphics that will be used on posters, floor stickers, and other collateral materials provided to businesses free of charge. So this window cling will be given to those participating businesses. So as an overview, together with the residents and the business community, we are all certainly trying to do our part to keep our town as safe and healthy as possible during these challenging times. We certainly recognize that we all have a role in the fight against COVID-19, and by committing to responsible actions, we show care, consideration, and appreciation for our community. And most importantly, by working together, our Oro Valley businesses and residents can help protect our vulnerable populations, reduce stress on our healthcare systems, and keep our businesses open, which is certainly one of the main intentions that you have all laid out, and specifically with some of the points that Mayor Winfield mentioned previously. So while all businesses in Oro Valley will be invited and encouraged to participate in this community-wide effort, resources and reimbursement will be available to certain qualifying businesses. So reimbursement can be given for things like PPE, as well as some marketing costs, which will help in aiding the sustainability of our smaller businesses. Other resources include webinar opportunities, technology, and other professional services coaching for things like marketing assistance, legal help, business planning, as well as a few others, as well as providing guidance directly to those businesses. And the many COVID resources that are available to businesses. They are all very busy out there trying to stay with their heads above water, and there are many services and resources that are available locally, state, and nationally, and so really helping them in their limited time to find what they need. And so the marketing firm, the Gordley Group, has helped us develop the name, branding, and marketing for this program, and are also building a microsite, which we are very excited to serve as a hub to bring everything together for our community. And we are excited that although this program is still in development, we will be launching soon. We anticipate sometime next week for our launch, so please keep an eye on our social media for updates and announcements. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chris and the entire team has really done outstanding work, and we look forward to seeing all those window clings in our businesses in the very, very near future. Also, last April, we rolled out our new website, you may recall, and it continues to improve with additional content and constructive feedback from both staff and our community. And we're really excited to be using our new engagement tool that was part of this new platform for our website. It's a feature called Discuss, and it allows our residents an opportunity to engage forum style. We are posting different questions. We started just recently, and to kind of get a feel for how this tool is working, our most recent question that is up right now is, how are you exercising and getting out during this COVID crisis? And people are posting their comments and ideas. It's a facilitated discussion so the town can respond. And we do envision lots of possibilities for quality engagement with our residents and another opportunity to get feedback on different types of proposals in the future. For example, like input on the master plan concepts for our parks, which we know will be coming up here later this fall. So so again, you saw the screen, you can find it right on our homepage. And there's a tab that says discuss, just click on it. And we hope that our residents will find it to be a great way for them to engage with the town in a really meaningful back and forth way where everybody can see the discussion and contribute. So I appreciate the communications team for getting that going. And then finally, I want to echo what Councilmember Jones, Joyce Jones-Ivey mentioned. You know, we don't typically recognize our retiring employees at town council meetings, and especially since we've been remote for some time now. But I do want to send a special thank you out to someone who has served you as council members and of course has served the entire town manager's team. Linda Kopfer, who I did ask to dial in, I hope she's dialed in so she can hear the kind words. She has served 4 town managers, 3 mayors, and 18 council members during her 10-year career. Her tenure, I know I don't have to tell you how well she has juggled schedules, responded to requests, and provided lots of kind care and compassion to you as elected officials, as well as the rest of the team. And we join in echoing your comments, Councilmember Jones-Ivey, and wishing her the best in her well-earned retirement. We will miss her. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That's all I have.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs. Now, I'll give council, if you'd like, the opportunity. I was looking to see if Linda had, so I don't know if she's called in or not, but if you would like to add on to the words that have been expressed regarding Linda before we go on with the agenda.
Mr. Mayor.
Oh, go ahead, Steve.
Member Solomon Pena.
Yes, Linda's been wonderful. I've worked with her since 2010, shortly after she came to the town, and she's been such a blessing. She's really, talk about herding cats. That's what her job was. She always made sure that the council knew where we were supposed to be, what we were supposed to be doing. She basically provided any information we needed, answered our questions, held our hands, was always there for a good conversation, and she is an integral part to the council running smoothly. Without her, it wouldn't have happened. And keep in mind, too, this wasn't just during normal business hours. She usually was in early, worked late, and every event we had, she was there before we arrived and was there until we left, making sure everything was set up. If there were going to be refreshments, that they were there, basically that we were well taken care of so we could do all jobs. So I hate to see her go, but I know she was so looking forward to finally having time for herself. She, you know, as she discussed, finally realized there's all these things I keep saying I want to do after I stop working, and I'm not getting any younger, so it's time to stop working and get out there and do those things and have time myself. So I know she's going to have the time of her life. I'm real happy for her. It's sad that we lost her. But I'm also pleased to say I've met her replacement, who's received 2 days of training from Linda, a crash course, and she seems like she's going to be able to step into that job and hopefully handle the 7 of us and keep us organized and keep us going. So anyway, God bless Linda. We wish you the best and hope you just enjoy the heck out of the rest of your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Pena.
Hi, Linda. While I can't see you, I just want you to know how much you are appreciated. Every time I went into the office, you had nothing but a smile. And I know you were under stress, but you never showed it. And talk about a true professional. You did all of us well. So all the best to a great retirement. Enjoy it. It's well deserved.
Thank you. I'll add that town manager Jacobs stole a little bit of thunder there. I was going to share with you during Linda's tenure, serving with the 3 mayors and 4 town managers and 18 council members. That's That's quite a record. Something that I've certainly appreciated about Linda is just a real source of peace coming in here to the office and checking in with her. Always very calm, peaceful spirit exuding out of her space, and something that I really appreciated. And of course, just her ability to coordinate and schedule and guide us to where we needed to be. So, Linda, you're very much appreciated by the council, and we wish you the very best. The agenda will remain as posted, and I'd like to thank everyone for taking the time to join us this evening. This meeting is taking place online to comply with the ongoing social distancing requirements and ensure the community's ability to participate. In order to participate, one must be logged into Zoom directly by computer or telephone. For those who are unfamiliar with the Zoom software, I'd like to provide a quick overview on how to participate. Everyone's microphone, except for the individual that has the floor, will be muted throughout the meeting to ensure as smooth and efficient meeting as possible. Only select staff can turn on your microphone at the appropriate time if you'd like to ask a question or provide comments. I will do my best to let everyone know when it is appropriate to raise your hand for a particular agenda item. If you wish to address the council on any agenda item or during the call to audience, please raise your hand only when I announce it's appropriate to do so. And there are two ways to do this. For those participating on any platform other than by phone, find and select the participants icon. This will open a dialog box that lists all participants in the meeting. Scroll down until you find your name and select your name. Once your name is selected, a second box will pop up where you have the option to raise your hand. For those participating via phone, press star 9 to raise your hand. Please wait to raise your hand until the appropriate agenda item has been announced and after I announce the opportunity to do so. Otherwise, we will not be able to discern which topic that you wish to address in relation to the agenda. Our aim this evening is to proceed in a timely and efficient manner and to provide everyone an opportunity to participate that chooses to. Once your hand is raised, staff will be alerted to your request to speak. So please raise your hand if you have a question or comment after I announce the appropriate time to do so. At that time, I will call on those with their hands raised to provide questions or comments. I will then announce your name and staff will unmute your access so you can speak. Please make sure that you are not also muted on your personal device. Please review the meeting agenda so that you know the item on which you would like to speak. Please don't raise your hand until we've made it to that item on the agenda. As with all town council meetings, please clearly state your name and whether or not you are an Oro Valley resident. Also, speakers are limited to no more than 3 minutes. A timer will be used as with in-person meetings, and we ask that you please respect the 3-minute time limit. So those are the instructions for how to participate this evening. And again, we're very pleased that you've joined us tonight. At this particular time is the call to audience. So if you would like to speak about a non-agenda item, this is the time to do so during the call to audience. I'll wait a moment to see if there's any raised hands. Don't see any raised hands, so we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is presentations. Mr. Standage, you would please read the item.
Proclamation, National Preparedness Month.
Thank you. I'd like to read the following proclamation for National Preparedness Month. Whereas across the nation, September has been designated as National Preparedness Month to encourage all Americans to improve emergency preparedness in their communities. And during National Preparedness Month, there is a nationwide coordinated effort sponsored by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security to raise awareness about the importance of emergency preparedness and to encourage every citizen to renew their commitment to promoting emergency preparedness in homes, businesses, schools, and communities. And emergency preparedness is the responsibility of every resident of Oro Valley. And all are urged to make preparedness a priority and take steps to protect our community before disaster strikes by learning about risk factors in order to protect against injuries, property damage, and potential economic loss in our community caused during disasters. And whereas during the month of September, the town of Oro Valley, Oro Valley Community Emergency Response Team, Pima County Office of Emergency Management, along with community organizations active in disasters, and other local, tribal, private, and volunteer agencies will engage in activities that encourage residents to take steps to make themselves and their families more resilient and better prepared for disasters and emergencies. Now, therefore, I, Joseph C. Winfield, Mayor of the Town of Oro Valley, Arizona, hereby proclaim the month of September 2020 to be Preparedness Month. This year's Preparedness Month theme is Disasters Don't Wait, Make Your Plan Today, and challenges everyone to take actions to prepare now and throughout the year. As we continue to respond to COVID-19, there is no better time to be involved than this September. Citizens, businesses, schools, and communities are able to help first responders in our community by training how to respond during an emergency and planning what to do when a disaster strikes where we live, work, and visit. Developing individualized plans, assembling emergency supply kits, learning life-saving skills such as CPR and first aid, reviewing insurance policies and coverage for hazards, and reviewing the resources available at www.ready.gov help ensure a resilient and prepared Oro Valley. Of course, this year has certainly underscored the importance of emergency preparedness with COVID-19, the Bighorn Fire, subsequent localized flooding, and the economic outfall and so forth. So this is a well-timed proclamation. I'd like to recognize this evening Char Ackerman, Emergency Management and Safety Coordinator with the Town of Oro Valley, who will officially accept this proclamation this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for proclaiming September as National Preparedness Month.
And thank you for joining us and for receiving this proclamation. And we appreciate all that you do, Char. During the COVID-19, the Bighorn Fire in particular, you have put in an enormous amount of work and support to our police department and to our community and the Forest Service and others. And so we really appreciate your efforts that you have been engaged in the past several months. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. The next item on our agenda is the consent agenda. I'd like to make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Councilmember Rodman, second. Before we take a vote, Mr. Standish, would you read the items on the consent agenda, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Item A, minutes, July 15th, July 22nd, and August 19th, 2020. Item B, resolution number R20-41, authorizing and approving an extension to the lease for the police department substation currently located at Mountain View Plaza. Item C, resolution number R20-42, approving the agenda committee assigned for the period of September 1st, 2020 to November 30th, 2020. Item D, request for approval of a final plat for phase two of the Saguaro Viejos East residential subdivision located near the northwest corner of La Cholla Boulevard and Naranja Drive. And item E, approval of any direction to the town attorney and necessary staff as discussed in executive session.
Okay, thank you. So we have a motion, a second. Mr. Standish, could we do a roll call vote, please?
Vice Mayor Barrett. Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Yes.
Councilmember Pena.
Yes.
Councilmember Rodman.
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield.
Yes. The council or the consent agenda passes 6-0. Thank you, Mr. Standish. We'll go to the now the regular agenda, item one.
Item 1A, resolution number R20-43, declaring the proposed zoning code amendments to section 22.10, section 24.9, section 27.9, and other associated sections of the zoning code relating to the economic expansion zone in attachment one and filed with the town clerk a public record.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? If not, I move to approve resolution number R20-43, declaring the proposed code amendments to the economic expansion zone, section 24.9, and other associated sections of code in attachment one and filed with the town clerk a public record. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Councilmember Solomon seconds. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Yes, what I need an understanding as to what we're voting on.
And I have staff.
Okay. I can try to help, Mr. Mayor.
Thanks, Mr. Cohen.
Sure, this is a common, what I would call a ministerial act or procedural act to make a proposed ordinance change a public record. It's really a cost-saving item so that the town doesn't have to publish it in the newspaper. So it's just really a ministerial act that precedes the substantive discussion that I think you may have here in just a moment. That's all.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Mr. Standish, can we take a roll call vote, please?
Vice Mayor Barrett. Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Yes.
Councilmember Pena.
Yes.
Councilmember Rodman.
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield.
Yes. Mr. Standish, the motion passes 6-0. Mr. Standish, regular agenda item 1B.
Public hearing, ordinance number O20-05, amendments to section 22.10, section 24.9, section 27.9, and other associated sections of the Oro Valley Zone Code.
Okay. We have a staff report.
Good evening, Mayor Winfield, council, colleagues, everyone listening tonight. My name is J.J. Johnston. I'm Director of Community and Economic Development for the town of Oro Valley. Can everybody hear me all right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And assisting me tonight will be Ms. Malini Sims, Principal Planner for the town, and Mr. Byervella. Joe, please unmute them, audio and video. And again, it's a pleasure to represent the amendments on the EEC. So let's start. Next slide, please. So the purpose tonight is to consider the feedback that we've heard from the last several council meetings regarding this amendment, proposed amendment. Additional information and changes have been made into the discussions we received from you, particularly on July 15th and July 1st. And it should be noted that the initial proposed amendments to the EEZ were heard and approved by the Planning and Zoning Commission late last year. and it's been in front of the council several times. So I would just say that tonight's focus is to provide the additional information and present the changes in response to your recent concerns and direction. As you know, in reading the staff report, there are 8 pages of single line details from staff on addressing those concerns and inputs. I believe Mr. Vell and Ms. Sims have made some very significant modifications to what we presented to you last July. We've added some requirements to reflect our commitment to address your concerns and the concerns you're hearing from the residents. And I just say on a personal note to Mayor Winfield and Councilmember Jones-Ivy, I want to personally thank you for taking the time for all of the site visits in the last few days, and your insights and feedback to Mr. Vella, Ms. Sims, and I were very valuable. So may I have the next slide, please? Again, our focus tonight will be to provide the additional information about the need and the benefit for targeted pre-grading. We just want to note that we lose about 2 to 5 qualified leads a month that we receive from the Arizona Commerce Authority, Sun Corridor, a regional partner, and corporate site selectors due to the lack of available ready-to-build sites, particularly those sites that are 5 to 10 acres or more in size and part of a master plan technology park. And as we've talked in previous meetings, this is very critical for site selectors to know that they can build very quickly. So the changes we've made tonight that we'll be talking you through address the concerns you stated to us several times about the possible proliferation of pre-grading, protecting the viability and view impacts, and also adding staff review on a case-by-case basis versus a carte blanche. And very specifically, we also noted, and the public and site selectors have also noted, that you recently unanimously adopted a primary employer incentive program and code amendments to the commercial and tech parks. That has generated a lot of positive press for the town. We're getting a lot of new inquiries from people about putting projects here. So we also heard equally the concerns about the amount of pre-grading that could happen, specifically with regard to sites that are being developed and the appearance of those sites. So based on your very extensive feedback in the July meetings and after that, staff has added new requirements to review both on a case-by-case basis. And to further illustrate what approval of pre-grading could look like, we have added in the slide presentation coming up visual analysis conducted on all of the site visits that would be visible from homes and roadways. And you'll see the results of those photo simulations in the next slide. Please, next slide. So, as you can see by this slide, the town does lack available ready-to-build sites. Again, 5 acres or more in master plan technology parks, most notably, because that's the number of inquiries that we're getting, 2 to 5 a month. Today, our current approach does not meet employers' needs. It has us overlooked by national, even international, global site selection firms. The site selection firms are retained by major corporations to do an evaluation of candidate sites, usually multiple states, multiple communities. And in a minute, I'll show you a typical checklist that we received just last month. And also, I want to note that historically, the town has had a very low absorption of tech park land, partially because that our process is slow and cumbersome. So you and former councils have received multiple requests to convert tech park land into residential and other uses, such as senior care. And we are working against a reputation that has gone many, many years of not always moving at the speed of business, not being business friendly. But the good news is we have some excellent prospects on the horizon right now. Some are actively visiting us this week and later in September that are asking us to move faster. I would also add to this slide, because of the ongoing pandemic, site selectors are telling all of us that work in economic development, there will be less physical visits of sites in communities, and there will be more pre-screening digitally through computers, just looking at sites. So let's just go to the next slide. So this is the checklist I just referred to. This came from an actual prospect that was sent to us through an unnamed site selection firm to the Arizona Commerce Authority. The very first two items you see on the right, location, suitable for state-of-the-art life science manufacturing facility. This particular prospect is a fill finish facility, latest biotechnology, research and development. The direct labor alone would be 300 to 400 jobs. The capital investment would be north of $250 million. The building would be at least 250 to 300,000 square feet with an additional 125,000 square feet. All of this is evidenced on the continuation of the spreadsheet. I would just add that this is very typical for large life, health, and bioscience companies that need to satisfy a need because they received new money for a new drug or something. We're getting several of these inquiries in Arizona. So the pre-grading fulfills some of that time to market. Pre-grading, and I'll talk more about that. And as you can see on number six, minimum 20 acres, they're not all minimum 20 acres, but they always come in 10 acres or more with flat topography, which means targeted initial site work to make it build ready. And then site ownership is very important as well. Let's go to the next slide, please. This is now known as the Icogen building. We have spent months talking about to the CEO of Icogen about they were going to exit the building July 15th because their contract with Sanofi was over. And there are prospects touring this building, talking to us about literally possibly doubling the size, doing some site work to the east side, and all in all. What we're looking at right now, the gross building itself is about 112,500 square feet. It sits on about 11 and a half acres, has about 146 parking spaces, and could potentially be expanded. So they have retained local brokers from Cushman Wakefield PICOR, Rick Kleiner, and Rob Glasser. They've done a lot of major projects in the Tucson region. So I'll tell you a little bit about site selectors that are actually touring and looking at it. Their partners are in California. The director of Savills, which is a major company located 70 countries, 40,000 employees. They deal with a lot of very large scale projects. Also, the senior director of Cushman Wakefield in California is also on the team. He is chair of the National Life Sciences Advisory team. And he personally has done major projects in San Diego, Boston, North Carolina. We've been talking with them very privately for several months, and they are beginning to send us great companies that they want to know a lot more about Oro Valley. How fast can we move through the process if they were to do a long-term lease and or purchase of this building and expand it from start to finish? When could they move in? So I hope this gives you an idea. It's not just sites that we're looking to improve. It's existing buildings with surrounding real estate that could help as well. Next slide, please. I would also say, as you're looking at this slide, is I've talked with many site selectors over the summertime, and we've all heard about the shifting of the supply chain, more active pharmaceutical ingredients called APIs, building blocks that are modern to all major pharmaceutical companies. The U.S. has an overdependence on other countries for the supply chain. This is one of the reasons we're getting a lot of large bio, life, health science companies looking at Arizona right now. So in our current process, as you're looking at, the current process, and it doesn't give me any pleasure to say this, it is cumbersome. It's being viewed by site selectors and prospects as complicated, potentially political. This is over several years, not just in the last few months. And there are a lot of upfront costs that we're asking landowners to absorb to land a major corporation. As you can see on the left, a minimum of 16 months to go through our current process. This is very, very difficult for me to sit down and talk with CEOs that are coming here saying it's going to take 16 months to 18 months to get through our process, where they could go to another community in Arizona, visit existing buildings or developable sites, and know they could go from start to move in 12 months. So the current process is shown on the screen. You've seen this information before, but it has been extended to show the entire development review process from concept to occupancy. So unless a tenant is known right now, the site design that you see on the left, 4 to 6 months, is just a guess. It will likely be done twice. As such, the current process definitely discourages any pre-grading. It takes a lot of time. The proposed process actually has the same elements that are required in the current process, but the main difference is we're moving the site plan approval. We're not requiring all of that until a site is pre-graded. More on that in a minute. It's a more appropriate time for our client to do it that way. It meets the requirements, and it is efficient for the property owner to create shovel-ready sites. Now, let me just put the extra half year in perspective. Some of these companies we're talking about, if we're able to get them to move the Oral Valley on a designated EEZ site and they generate $100 million a year in revenue, which is not a stretch at all, an extra 6 months in our process or not in our process either makes them $50 million or costs them $50 million, all things being equal. So that's what the company is looking at. That is a lot of money for a company to leave on the table just because we may have the most beautiful, desirable community. The people that actually make the financial decisions are going to look at that 6 months as real money to their company. Next slide, please. Individual site review. We've added criteria to approve requests on a case-by-case basis. This is one of the modifications that Mr. Vela and Ms. Sims have made based on your impact. We also are focusing on impacts to view a lot more. We've already discussed how the proposed code can significantly limit our ability to remove plants before the site plan approval. Changes have been made to address your concerns in several ways, especially your main concern that if you approve this amendment, we'll have a proliferation of pre-grading. Specifically, a criteria has been added to approve those on a case-by-case basis under the careful review of your designated planning and zoning administrator. Also, applicants must clearly demonstrate, show evidence of their ability to construct on a site within 5 years. If they do not do that, we might grant a two-year extension because something like a pandemic might happen, but the project's going to happen. But at any rate, after 10 years, revegetation in the new code amendment will be required after 10 years. Applicants also must provide a visual analysis to our staff to evaluate the view impacts on their site. Conditions may be added to further minimize their impacts, such as larger buffer yards, more trees, etc. Next slide, please. Changes to regulate the appearance of the sites. As we've discussed previously, and now with your additional input, the proposed code now requires more landscaping and more buffer yards than the current code for pre-graded sites. And let me repeat, we're proposing more requirements than the current code allows. Additionally, and however to address the council's concern about the appearance of these sites, a change has been made after your July meeting that is going to require that landowner to have decomposed granite as ground cover. That code that requires ground cover to control dust and stabilize a graded site, you know that very well. The ground covers range from hydro seeding to decomposed granite. It is typically seen in front yards, parking islands, and it's visually aesthetic. It's the most visually aesthetic of all the options. The example shown on the screen is Bighorn Commerce, which is a site recently graded near Oracle and Tangerine. And then, as we talked about in July meeting, if we're close to a neighborhood, we will require a neighborhood meeting. There will be significant increases to protecting the visual appearances of these sites. Next slide, please. So we have, we went out to all of these sites after your July meeting. We hired a consultant to go out and do photo simulations of those sites. I'm not going to go site by site in great detail, but the site you're looking at right now is from the home that the subdivision that Vice Mayor brought to our attention in the July meeting, that if you do pre-grading near Innovation Park, the subdivision on the west could look across and see the pre-grading. You see on the after, on the before and the after shot, the after shot, the larger photo, the very large red rooftop you see is Icogen. You also see a very large berm area that will be protected in code. This photo sim reveals you can hardly see Innovation Park undeveloped sites. It does show a potential graded area. It's very, very far away from the subdivision, and it's a lot closer. It's a lot closer if you're looking east to west than west to east. So next slide, please. Miller Visual Analysis, this is from the Rancho Vistosa Bridge. Mayor Winfield, Mr. Vela, Ms. Sims, and I stood on that bridge literally yesterday, and we looked at all of the sites, as you can see, across that. That's on the Rancho Vistosa Bridge. This is actually what you see when you stand on the bridge, but most people that are going to drive by are going to look at the beautiful Santa Catalina Mountains as they drive. They're not going to stop on the bridge and look around. So that's kind of the point of showing you this slide. Let's go to the next slide. So this is the view from Vistosa Commerce Loop. And I think all of you have been made aware over the last several years that this is about a 15.2 acre site. It was recently acquired by Mr. Tom Warren. He may actually be in the Zoom meeting tonight, and he may want to make a couple of comments in the public hearing. But he acquired the site, and I can just tell you that he offered in planning and zoning meetings last November, December, and to the council meetings, that if we were able to bring a high-tech project to this location, and there have been a few that looked, he would personally call a neighborhood meeting. He would sit down with the neighbors, show them what's planned, get their input before he even started the process. So that's not required in current code, but we are going to get there. If these code amendments are all adopted, that will be a requirement. Next slide, please. So this is another visual simulation of the photos that are nearby that site. Member Jones-Ivy joined Mr. Vela, Ms. Sims, and I. We went to that site literally last week. We stood right next to the fence. What you're looking at is very close to the parking lot of Miles Labeling Company, a new primary employer that located here. As you can see by the height of the fence, first of all, we would not put a building right next to that wall, but somebody would have to be in their backyard, in my opinion, jumping up and down on a trampoline to see what we're proposing on this site. And when we were at this site with Member Jones Ivy, the production manager of Miles Labeling came into the parking lot. We all met him, and I'm really glad to say that Miles Labeling is doing just fine. There's been no layoffs, and he could not say enough nice things about the great reception he's received by the council and our Chamber of Commerce and our staff. I just wanted to add that in because we do have some great success stories, including Miles Labeling. So next slide, please. This is the view from Tangerine Road, the before and after view. So you're looking northwest towards Innovation Park. The site is visible from the road, but the views are minimized through the required landscape and buffer yards, as you can see in the after shot. The proposed code amendments require the landowners to beef up the landscaping beyond what the current code requires. It's requiring the landowners to mitigate the visual impacts, as I described earlier, and it requires landowners to revegetate that site if a proposed development does not happen in a specified time period. These are all the result of the feedback we've received from you during the last several meetings and the feedback we've received from residents. The bottom line, the planning and zoning administrator on a case-by-case basis can say no to moving any dirt around. It has to meet all of the code requirements of the town council. Thank you, and next slide, please. This is another view from Tangerine Bridge. Again, you can see the sites are over 6 football fields away from the bridge. You see a lot of different orientations of that. Next slide, please. The key points are the sites that are nearest the homes will not be visible in this proposed amendment. Sites along Oracle are naturally screened. Changes and there are 3 areas that are very distantly visible to nearby residential along the roads, but again, these will be reviewed on a case-by-case basis. The changes we've made and presented to you tonight are in direct response to from the extensive concerns you expressed to staff regarding the potential proliferation and appearance of potential pre-graded sites. I could just tell you we listened very, very carefully. And I just want to say, again, there's 2 to 5 opportunities your economic development team cannot check the box right now because we do not have a build-ready site, not even at Innovation Park. I spoke to Mr. Neil Simon, the managing principal director of the developer of Innovation Park. He wrote you a very nice letter, and he confirmed that there are no build-ready sites at Innovation Park right now. Yet, Project Alpha, which you've heard about a year ago in exec session, they have reached back out to us. They say they want to re-engage us in 2021. Right now, it's their understanding, and again, Town Manager Jacobs, Assistant Town Manager Cornelson, and I met with the entire leadership team, and they looked at our current process, and they say right now, in their own schedule, it would take them 6 months to design and permit in Oral Valley, another 9 months to construct a 120,000 square foot building, and then another 9 months to build the clean room. This is their best case scenario. I can tell you that we're in a real dogfight with some other communities that can already shave 6 months off because they have the sites that are ready to build and we don't. What's at stake with this is literally 250 jobs. This is this is just a great opportunity. This company checks all of the boxes: aerospace, defense, R&D, research, development. They know Oro Valley, they love Oro Valley, but 6 months is an enormous amount of time to this company or any other company. And again, we're losing these leads when we have an opportunity to say, yes, we can get you through this process on these targeted EEZ sites from start to finish in 12 months. And that is the main reason we are proposing these changes tonight. And last slide, please. Summary is, this is absolutely a critical path forward for us to get considered by these major site selection firms and the active projects that we have in place. I just want to respectfully remind people that may have not heard this in previous presentations. Oral Valley has 13,000 residents who drive out of our town every day to work somewhere else. 13,000. And we have empty buildings and we have sites. If we can start attracting these large technology bioemployers, just think about the job creation for local residents that could help enable. Combined with the previously approved incentive policy and the other code amendments you've made in Commercial and Tech Park, you've really captured the attention of other people that are reconsidering doing business in the Oral Valley. This has been extremely helpful to have. We just have to find a way to shave time off of these highly competitive projects, because every one of them will tell us, look, we have empty buildings, we have greenfield sites we're looking at and other locations, and time is very, very important to us. So I would just want to close by, before we take any questions, by thanking you again for unanimously approving the five-year economic development strategy for the town, unanimously approving the primary incentive program. And I got to just say, from where I sit, the past is not our potential. It's time to update the EEZ for all of the reasons I cited and others, because if we do that, I promise you, we'll have a much better chance of landing some of these projects. Mayor Winfield, Council, that concludes my very brief presentation. We'll be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Johnston. We appreciate your presentation. We do have a public hearing associated with this agenda item. I would like to open the public hearing at this time. If you'll recall, when giving instructions about how to participate, if you want to speak to this particular agenda item, this is your opportunity. So if you would please raise your hand. I did receive in advance that Tom Warren may be speaking during this public hearing. I do see a raised hand by Mr. Perry. And so Mr. Perry will begin with you. And so if you would state your name and whether you're a resident of Oral Valley, please.
Thank you. Can everybody hear me all right?
Yes.
Oh, great. I'm Dave Perry, president and CEO of the Greater Oral Valley Chamber, Oral Valley resident for almost 13 years now. Before I start, I want to thank Linda Keffer for putting up with me for 9.5 years. I want to thank Chris Cornelison and all of you for your support of the Business Assistance Program. I want to give my best to Vice Mayor Melanie Baer. As a veteran of a serious bicycle accident myself, my thoughts are with you, of course. We have a $40,000 operating agreement with the Town of Oral Valley for services rendered. My comments tonight are certainly not part of those services. I've spoken to you in the past about these code amendments. We continue to support them to include the provisions for preliminary grading. We think staff's response to the concerns you raised in July are addressed, and we believe that the proposal is fair to all concerned. I read the letter from Neil Simon of our chamber member Venture West, and he talked about, to reiterate what JJ said, a robust pipeline, the need for shovel-ready sites so that we can level the playing field, no pun intended. And I think also the point that preliminary grading is really expensive, and they're not just going to go through and plow Innovation Park. They're going to do it strategically, perhaps 1 to 2 parcels at a time, and these proposals tonight give sufficient overview to that process. I want to back up just a minute. Last week, we hosted our 28th annual meeting. Some of you had the chance to watch it. I interviewed Jill German, the head of Roche Tissue Diagnostics, and Jill talked about the 2 big capital investments being made at the Roche campus right now. Their employee count is now 1,600 people, and they've made these terrific advances in cervical cancer treatment and diagnostic, companion diagnostics. things I don't even understand, but they're important. When Roche makes those kinds of investments in our community, other businesses say, hey, what do they know that we don't know? And when they're announcing these major breakthroughs in the treatment of cancer, people say, there must be talent right there in Oro Valley and Greater Tucson. And when we start to build an incubator with your help and Venture West and the Chamber and everybody pitching in, they say, hey, I'm going to connect these dots. There's opportunities in that place. Roche is a world-class company. And we are so fortunate to have them here, and other people want to be near them. We just have to give them a place to build. And that's what this proposal does. It's important to our community. It's important to our future. And we respectfully request your favorable consideration this evening. Thank you for your time and for your service.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Perry. Okay. So, Mr. Warren, I believe that's you. Thomas's iPad.
I'm at home and not in my office. Can you hear me, Mayor?
Yes, we can hear you. Okay. You have the floor. If you could state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley.
No, Thomas Warren, Tom Warren. I'm not a resident of Oro Valley. I'm a resident of Pima County. Real quick, I've spoken to the mayor and council before a few times, and I just want to let you know, as chair of the Research Park and CRC Board of Directors, that we're really happy about the Innovation Center and lab coming along like it is. It's great. Mayor.
We can hear you.
And can now you see me now? There you can see me, right. We're really, the board in the whole park, is as far as the CRC Tech Park, is really excited about this. And I'm glad to hear it's starting to even get some interest with Leeds. Also, my previous experience with Oro Valley many years ago, which was just alluded to, was that I was the developer for Ventana Medical, along with my partner, and also BFL, Gary Brav of BFL. So it's great to see where it is today. I don't want to be redundant, to be really time sensitive. It gets down to perception of the site selector and eventually the group or entity that's going to occupy the site, and it gets down to time. So it's both perception and time. And I know the building ready has been spoken about over and over again. But I stress business ready. I think that's so important, because people that are making substantial investments, and it's not their money, but they're responsible for the money. Most of the time, it's not their money. It's their stockholders' money and so on. That is so important for that, for people to have that business ready feeling. And I won't be redundant at all as far as all the points that JJ Johnston brought up this evening, and I've read the entire report and I've seen the changes. I think they're responsible. I think the grading should be responsible and keep with the image of Oro Valley, which is a great image. And I'd just like to say, in the community at large in Pima County, and talking to some consultants and working with them, that this mayor and council has really made giant steps, and I'm not just saying this. You have made giant steps in a perception in the business community in Pima County as far as being business ready. It's really a big change over the last year in a lot of people's minds. And thanks for your time and effort.
Thank you. Is there, so during this public hearing, if you want to speak to this particular topic, this is the time to raise your hand. Mr. Bowen, if you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley. You have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you to the council. My name is Tim Bowen, and I am a resident of Oro Valley. With the staff being available, I would like to ask a few questions about slide number 5 of 17 in the package, which presents a a checklist basically that site selectors use. And there's a couple of items that I think a resident would expect to see on this checklist that I don't see. Number one, is the price of the land a factor for site selectors? Number two, is the ownership of land around the land that's being sought after considered? And a third item I would like to point out is I do not find item number five credible as a resident of Oral Valley. Being within 15 miles of a major highway is not a business-friendly location in the United States. I would suggest that perhaps this checklist has been altered in some way to make Oral Valley seemingly more attractive to site selectors. And I do not believe that number five is a true criteria as written. 15 miles away is simply too far. Mr. Mayor and the council, I thank you for the opportunity to address this question.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bowen. Again, if there are others during the public hearing, if you have, if you would like to speak to this particular agenda item, this is your opportunity to speak. I'll give you one more minute. So my children and Zoom has taught me patience.
Mayor?
I see a hand. So AGMBP, if you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oral Valley.
Yes, my name is Adrian Gill, and I am a resident of Oral Valley.
Okay. If it's possible for you to speak up, you're kind of faint.
Oh, okay. It could be the BBC English accent as well. I'll try and speak more into the microphone. Is that any better?
That is better.
Okay. Well, just to repeat it in case people didn't hear it, my name is Adrian Gill, and I am a resident of Oro Valley. The question that I have, there was a statement about, I think it was something like 13,000 people leave Oro Valley on a daily basis to work elsewhere. What we didn't hear and what we'd be interested in learning is the demographic of those people. In other words, partly to understand whether those are people that could be employed within Oro Valley or not. So, for example, in the new businesses, and a lot has been said about work opportunities from the new businesses without stating whether those new businesses are offering very selected, specialized work that means people in Oro Valley could perhaps not fulfill some of those positions. So we'd like to understand that demographic of the 13,000 leaving Oro Valley.
Okay. So, Adrian, what I'm going to do is with these questions that have been asked during the public hearing, I just want to make sure that everyone that wants to speak during the public hearing has that opportunity. And then I'm going to ask staff to address these specific questions, including yours.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to this particular agenda item? And again, I'll give you a minute. So seeing no additional hands, I'd like to, during the public hearing, Mr. Johnston or whoever you would like to designate, but there was the question regarding page 5 on the PowerPoint the checklist. And can you, the question was price of land, is that a factor? Adjacent land ownership, is that a consideration? And then the speaker had a question about number five on the list and questioned its credibility.
Mayor Winfield, glad to answer those questions. I'm looking at the checklist. It's several pages long. On most of the pages, it states strictly confidential. First of all, yes, the price of land is a factor, but it's a one-time cost. The companies we're talking with are looking at ongoing operating costs, net present value 20 years forward. So the cost of land, it's significant, but it's a one-time cost. Yes, that is always assumed that when we make that third, fourth, and fifth phase of a site selection process and they start to negotiate on sites, that certainly will be revealed. The ownership is also very important, and that is revealed on the slide that I showed. I think that was number 8 or 9 on that first page. This form has not been altered in any way. I just took the first page to make the point that the location and the build ready, those are the first two most important factors in this company. If we cannot satisfy that, all of the other items on the checklist become not relevant. The question about 15 miles, this is a fill finish production facility. This is not standard that every major company has to be right on an interstate. Roche Tissue Diagnostics is a great example of that. So is the Veterinarian College and so on. They just want to know that they can get on an interstate in a reasonable amount of time. That's fairly typical. I've seen these slides even go more than 15 miles. Those were the questions that Mr. Bowen had asked, I believe.
So Mr. Johnston, just for clarification, this checklist is a checklist of a specific company.
Correct, Mayor Winfield. It's a very specific company. It's unnamed to us. It is a confidential life sciences company that's looking for a location for a new state-of-the-art fill-finish production facility. And it also has, and this says it right here, they are integral to solving capacity shortages for medical-grade devices, has a potential to significantly contribute to advancing public health in the United States. I mean, the Arizona Commerce Authority would not have sent it statewide if this wasn't a very, very important project. And they say they want to pick a site and start construction as soon as possible. They go into detail and detail and detail about the timing. Master plan already approved, shovel-ready condition. I mean, I could go on and on. I was just trying to make the point. This is a fairly typical spreadsheet that we get from ACA, Sun Corridor, and site selection firms.
So is it fair to say that among site selectors' checklist, there's going to be some commonalities, but there's also going to be some nuances from one checklist to another, depending on what the needs and interests of that particular company
have? Mayor Winfield, that is exactly correct. And when we get these RFIs, I personally read through them. If I don't think they're going to be a good fit for Oral Valley, maybe it's heavy manufacturing with, you know, dozens of 18-wheeler trucks or a high energy user or whatever, I just thank ACA for the opportunity and we take a pass. We don't waste their time. We don't waste their site selector's time. So we read each and every one of these opportunities, and they don't always come from the state government or the regional EDC partners. Sometimes they come directly from a site selection firm, and I know dozens of them, and because of my reputation with them, they just send me things directly, especially the Icogen building. I mean, all of the leads that have been generated, the people that are coming here, the CEOs from biotech companies that are coming here to Oral Valley to tour that building, those leads do not come from anywhere else but your economic development staff. And we have been hard at work generating the additional leads and interest in Oral Valley And I'm delighted to say there are a lot of great projects out there, especially in life and health and biosciences. So, Mayor, I do appreciate the opportunity to clarify that.
So Mr. Gill asked the question in your presentation, and you've mentioned this before, that there's approximately 13,000 folks that leave Oro Valley for employment elsewhere. He asked about the demographics of those individuals and if there was even employment opportunities in Oro Valley for them. Could you speak to that, please?
Easily. Thank you, Mr. Mayor Winfield. The data comes from the U.S. Census Bureau, and it's been cross-referenced and verified by Pima County. So, yes, we have a whole section on the town website about the demographics of our local residents. Of really particular interest, though, the question that wasn't asked, but I think Mr. Gill will appreciate the answer, we know, according to this data, the people who live in Oro Valley, where they're driving to work every day. Number one, no surprise, Raytheon, Rita, Tech Park, Innovation Park, Downtown Tucson, University of Arizona, Williams Center, Medical. I could just go on and on, but there are 10,000 people, 10,000 locations, and because the University of Arizona is standing up a biotechnology incubator and a veterinarian college, and Roche Tissue Diagnostics is expanding, and I could go on, and the recent actions by this council to put the welcome mat out and create a primary incentive program, we have a real opportunity here to attract some of these workers and put them in empty buildings in Oro Valley, especially Raytheon. They have looked here for a long time, looking at empty buildings that they could do short-term leases on. That's no big secret here. We would absolutely love it if they would put up a building here or take a building. I know somebody very personally who has lived here 24 years and has made that drive to Raytheon from Oro Valley every day. And I know Vice Mayor Barrett would say the same thing about her spouse. So just think about what might be going on in Honeywell, for example, if they vacate that building. What a great opportunity we would have just real close to Oro Valley to attract one of these employers closer to us. But when you think about putting 13,000 adult residents on the road every day down Oracle and Tangerine, and losing them to Tucson, Marana, and other communities, when we could keep them here, this is such an important tool for us to enable an employer to say yes to. Sorry about the brief editorializing. I hope you feel the passion I have for this. This is deeply personal to me, not just professional. So, yes, this information, the 13,000 that leave our community, I'm sure the number now is much higher because of COVID. But because of COVID, we're getting additional opportunities that we didn't have and a lot of emerging industries because of the supply chain. Thank you. I promise my next answer won't be as lengthy, but it's important to not just say what are the demographics, but talk about the specific people that live here and where they're going to work. That's the real point of the question I think Mr. Gill wanted an answer to.
Thank you, Mr. Johnston. I'm going to close the public hearing at this time, so thank you for those who participated in the public hearing. We appreciate your comments and questions. We'll open it now to council questions. And I'd like to just kind of quickly disclose that I had a conversation with Ms. Jacobs. It may have been a few weeks ago. It's relative to this topic. It was my understanding at the time that staff was recommending that this particular item be continued to September 16th. And we didn't get into a conversation as to what the rationale was for that, but that was the conversation. Subsequently, the vice mayor had contacted me and said that she had had an opportunity to go out of town to be with family. It was going to interfere with tonight's meeting. I had told her that I had understood that this particular item was going to be continued. And so I said, I don't see a problem with you being gone. It's my understanding that she was going to try to join us this evening, that there was a high chance that that was going to happen. But obviously with the accident. That's not going to happen. And Ms. Jacobs, I've had a subsequent conversation with Ms. Jacobs that she had talked with the vice mayor, and it was my understanding that the vice mayor, even though she wanted to be here this evening, that if we were to continue to have this discussion, that we didn't necessarily need to continue it, but I just feel an obligation to disclose those conversations that I had, and I feel a degree of obligation to honor my conversation with the vice mayor. But with that, Ms. Jacobs, can you, because you have a more recent conversation. So.
No, of course, Mr. Mayor and members of council, in your packet, we did provide language for the council to continue this item, leaving it as an option. After speaking with the vice mayor last week, she felt that she felt it was a good chance she was going to participate and that wouldn't be necessary, but we included that language just in case. And so the staff is very supportive of a continuation of this to the next meeting, should that be the desire of the town council, in order to allow for the participation of the vice mayor.
So with that, I guess I'd like to just kind of check in with council. I mean, we can have discussion on this, but if ultimately it gets continued to next week, it may be, or next to our next council meeting, it might be worthwhile to just simply hold off. I'll make a motion to continue. If there's strong sentiment otherwise, then I'll certainly.
Mr. Mayor,
Councilmember Gentilevin and Councilmember Pena.
Okay. I think it would be important for her to hear the new information. And particularly since this is something that is going to have an important impact on our town. And so I would like to have, I'd like to have it continued when we have full council available.
Councilmember Pena?
Yes, I actually had some questions that I wanted to ask, and I don't have a problem. I think it's fine to continue it, but because we actually had the slides up and sure. I wrote down questions thinking that we were going to have a conversation this evening, I'd like to ask those questions.
Okay. Can I just check with another council just real quickly? Anybody feel strongly? I think just going on with the conversation and then we'll see where that leads. Yes, Councilmember Solomon.
It's fine if council wants to consider continuance. We can do that on any item. It is an agendized item, ready for discussion. Notice has been given.
Yep.
This has already been continued at minimum. I agree with Councilmember Pena that I'd like to have a conversation and answer questions since we're already in the middle of this, and then sure. Council can always decide whether they want to proceed or continue.
Okay. Thank you, Councilmember Solomon.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, Councilmember Rodney.
We had talked about this now and talked about this, and now we've talked about it again.
Yeah.
I have no problem about continuing it because I know it was an issue that the vice mayor was very interested in. So if we're going to continue it, let's continue it. So we don't do the questions and the answers. She's mm-hmm. not here to hear those questions okay. and answers. They need to happen again 2 weeks from now. I'm just suggesting, I kind of wish that we had known sooner and we could have continued it, although I understand we had a public hearing published, and so right. that gave yeah. folks an opportunity. But I would suggest we don't go any farther at this point if we're going to continue.
Okay. Councilmember Nicholson, you have an opinion? Councilmember Nicholson.
Mayor, if he doesn't respond there, I do have one question.
Sure, Councilmember Solomon, just a moment. Did Councilmember. All right, Councilmember Solomon.
All right, thank you. I do have a major concern. Our economic development director was accused by Mr. Tim Bowen tonight of being a liar and falsifying a public document with no evidence whatsoever other than his own imagination. He accused Mr. Johnson of falsifying the table number 5 to buy it to Oro Valley. No evidence whatsoever. He impugned the integrity of one of our directors who has served in this private and public sector forever. This is extremely troubling considering he was just elected to be a member of this council. If he's going to be making a habit of accusing our staff of criminal activity, we're going to have a serious issue. I would hope that he would submit a written apology and refrain from baseless accusations like that. It doesn't help anyone. It's an insult to our staff, and we should call it as such. And I would like the rest of the council to join me in stating that he should be writing an apology and not make accusations unless he has factual evidence. That was abhorrent what he did tonight, and it was getting a pass. I don't understand that.
Thank you, Councilmember Solomon. I agree that it was inappropriate, and I'll leave it to Mr. Bowen about what action he wants to take. Councilmember Pena.
Thank you.
I have questions this evening. I'm going to defer my questions, but go ahead, Councilmember.
No, and I do have questions. I wanted to ask them. Yeah. And one of them is for Ms. Jacobs, this is recorded, right? So if somebody wanted to come back and look at this meeting and this particular item, they could have it recorded and see it in full. Is that correct? And any comments?
Please.
Hello?
I think I've heard Councilmember Nicholson out in the hallway. I don't know if he's having computer problems, but...
Can someone from IT answer the question that if somebody wanted to go and see the recording of this particular meeting and this particular item, they could see in full detail our discussion? Is that correct?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Pena, yes, that is correct.
Okay, thank you. So my first question, and this is for JJ, and I'm going to make a comment too, that I think that the staff has done a great job of trying to make sure that the council is updated on changes, did the site visits that the mayor and council member Jones Ivy attended. And so I think that that's showing a great good faith effort to try and come to a balance, because we do need to look at the long-term sustainability for the town. And I don't say it just from an economic development standpoint, but also just from pure economics of where the town is heading and where they'll need to head in order to continue to provide the services that we're all used to. The question that I have, JJ, is I believe it was on the slide number 4, and it talks about there will be an economic vitality review, and there's going to be metrics for that and done on a case-by-case basis. And I think to get people comfortable, somebody could say, or one could say, oh, every case is so urgent and so important that we would need to do every one. So what are the metrics that would determine the vitality to go forward with a project?
Mayor Winfield, Member Pena, thank you for the question. In a minute, I'm going to call on Planning and Zoning Administrator Mr. Vela, because he will make that determination in his current position. I just want to assure the council and the public that slide that I presented about the checklist, that came directly from the Arizona Commerce Authority and their site selector. I don't seek a written apology or anything. I just want to clear the record. I would never mislead this council. I just want you to know we get 2 to 5 of these a month. And I know it's confusing because we haven't dealt with site selectors at the level that we are right now, but they are getting more and more involved in these projects. So I'm going to ask Mr. Vela, Member Pena, to answer your question about what is involved on a case-by-case basis. Mr. Beller, please.
Thank you.
Mayor, Member Pena, so on a case-by-case basis, there'd be two criteria that we would look at. One would be that the client established that their proposed grading area, that it's feasible, realistic, that it could be absorbed and built on within a five-year time frame. So we'd be asking for evidence, whether it's very specific leads or contracts, so that we can make sure that the extent of grading fits the anticipated need versus the worst case scenario of someone grading a very large area and have it go vacant. So that analysis would be made in conjunction with economic development staff. The second step would be requiring a very specific visual analysis from different view perspectives, so that we can make sure that the extent of mitigation is appropriate. How much landscaping, the type of landscaping, down to what color decomposed granite would work best to ensure that the site was less visible, and hopefully not visible at all. So those two rungs would have to be met before staff can say yes to pre-grading.
Okay. And if, say, for instance, that economic vitality, those items weren't met within the five-year period, what are the, I guess, consequences? What is the mitigation for that and the protection for the town? I mean, should they not be met? What's in place?
Mayor, Member Pena, so a new addition to the code, based on your concerns mentioned last time we met on this topic, is that at the 10-year point, if the site has not been built yet, there's new language that requires that the site be revegetated. So what I mean by revegetated, I mean it would be required to provide a landscape plan that includes and mimics the extent of vegetation that you might find on a neighboring site in that area. So it would be the same type of vegetation and looking for the same type of density. So that is the fix and the safeguard.
Okay.
At the same time, at that 10-year point, if they show immediate evidence of, hey, staff, we just need another 6 months. Here's evidence that I'm actually going to build, concrete evidence that we're going to proceed. We have the ability to provide a short-term extension in terms of that time frame. So, but it will all be performance-based. We want to see the sites go vertical.
So there's mitigation steps. So it's not just a one time, here it is. It's all done in mitigation steps. That's very
correct.
Prudent.
That's correct. Very and prudent. This is a brand new requirement that goes further than any of our current grading remediation requirements.
Yeah, that's a good balance. And then the last question I want to look at is there was the slide that had the timelines. So it listed the 4 to 6 months versus, so I don't know if that slide can be put up, but when you look at worst case on the very end of the timeline on each one of those sides, it looked like it came out to 16 months. So what's the difference? It's if you look at 6 months, 2 months, 10 months, and you go over to the other side, 4 months, 2 months, 10 months. If you looked at the most conservative, they each kind of look at 16 months. So what is it that makes a difference? Is it the first step, the site plan?
Mayor Winfield, Council Member Pena, I can go ahead and answer that one. So that you're correct. It's the creating the ready to build site. So kind of what you can't see on the screen because we block it is the asterisk. That's really
right.
Where the employer user is going to come in. So
okay.
They're coming in, the site's already ready. So they already saved the time that it would be to pre-grade a site, So that's where that 10 months is based off. It's the 9 months for building plan approval and construction and the 1 to 2 months for site plan approval, which okay. is much quicker because a lot of the work's already been done.
Right. If you look at the compare of the two sides, they almost look the same. So, yeah. So thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. That's all my questions. Thank you. Okay. Great job.
Other questions? And just as my intention is to make a motion to continue this to the 16th, but I certainly want to keep it open to questions for those that want to ask questions.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I do have questions.
Okay, Council Member Jones Ivey.
JJ, if you can answer this, if not, whoever on your team can. I have been getting a lot of emails about this subject, and one of the big concerns that's been expressed is the number of current sites that we have available already in Oro Valley that have already been graded, and if these sites don't qualify to have a site selector take a look at them and consider them.
Mayor Winfield, Member Jones Ivey, thank you for the question. I'm going to ask Mr. Vela to hitchhike what I'm about to tell you. The most notable leads that we're getting right now, and we're mm-hmm. responding to, require a minimum of 5 acres, more often 10 to 20 acres with expandability in a master plan technology area because of the infrastructure necessary to transmit data very fast. So this proliferation of small 1 to 2 acre sites we have, a site selector would not even consider those anyway. So I'm sorry, all those sites exist in our community. We can hopefully find some smaller projects to put on them, but I'm going to ask Mr. Vela to answer the other part of your question.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor, Member Jones Ivey, so two different developments come to mind in terms of existing pre-grading sites. So Fit Hills Business Park, which is just adjacent to the Honeywell site, has 2 to 3 sites that have been graded previously that are vacant. They're on a smaller side. I would say they're about 2 to 3 acres, so not at the level and size that Mr. Johnson expressed a need for. The other area that I can think of off the cuff, one site that's been pre-graded is in Innovation Park. And again, it's a smaller site closer to Rancho Viseso Boulevard and Innovation Park intersection. And I believe it's about 2 to 3 acres in size. So the inventory of pre-graded sites for Tech Park is very slim. Especially relative to our competitors, which I include the University of Arizona as one of those, where they have a large stock of pre-graded sites to show different clients.
And so let me ask you, Bear, where are we with the Nakoma Sky project? Is that something that is still being considered? Because I know that is a large area that's been pre-graded already.
Correct. So Nakoma Sky did not seek pre-grading. They went through the full site plan review process, neighborhood meetings, and as you know, they had to push their development timeline out considerably because of market conditions, et cetera, et cetera. So our understanding today is that they will build the site. We do not know when, and they haven't set a timeline, but their project principals do check in with us on a regular basis and reiterate the fact that they will build. But again, no timeline's been expressed.
Okay, and for the smaller sites that are in Innovation Park, what can we possibly do with them? I mean, what kind of businesses could we attract to those smaller 1 to 3 acre sites?
So if I may, I'd like to defer that question to Mr. Johnson.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
And Mayor, Member Jones-Ivy, Mr. Simon and I spoke about this earlier today, and he sent an email to council. I believe it's in your packet. Right now, they have 4 of the 5 interested companies looking at existing buildings, which is really good news. And he is speculating, because of the University of Arizona Biotech Incubator, that we'll have some spinoffs to take some of those other sites. What he didn't say in the email that I will add, a company that was announced by Suncorder last week, Nanomanio, a venture capital-based company out of California, is funding it fully. If we had the biotech incubator in Oral Valley right now, Carol Stewart, Eric Smith, the lead staff people say, you know, they would love to be in Oral Valley, but they needed the move right away. So they're literally moving into the UA Center at Rita Ranch as we speak. So I just want to share with the council and the public this power of having a UA-backed incubator here. They're full right now. They could barely find space for this company until they build the bigger project. So they have other companies in mind for the incubator. So the incubator itself will open up probably late next month in October. This Nanomanio company would have taken 400 to 500 square feet out of 4,000. So that's just 10% of the space. They would have created 14 jobs. Average salary, $98,000 a year. That's already paid the salary by the VC company, not including benefits, not including stock options. I think because of the genius of the UA system and what they're doing with their incubators, we're going to get a lot more of those startup bio companies backed by VC that are on the edge of actually implementing their business plan. In this case, they already have customers. It's an advanced nanotechnology company. So I think the council's plural, going back several years investing in this and working with Venture West, is a great example of a partnership that we are striving to do in life, health, and biosciences. So full circle to answer the question, we have stock right now from the U of A to feed additional sites at Innovation Park and maybe spin off at Foothills and some of the others, because the ecosystem that you heard Mr. Warren speak about a little earlier. Thank you.
Okay, so that means we don't have any prospects at this particular time?
Member Jones-Ivy, for the smaller building sites at Innovation Park, there are several that are interested in leasing space. In terms of building on a site, Mr. Simon, the managing principal, says they do not have pre-graded sites right now. That was the email that he sent just a few hours ago. And he went on to say the ability to have that would be very beneficial for us landing Project Alpha. And he has been very involved in that project for more than a year. So if we had pre-graded building ready sites to look at, and right now Mr. Simon says in his email to council, they currently can't offer that. This code amendment and the process that Mr. Vela and Ms. Sims have come up with would make it a lot more cost effective for Mr. Simon to have a small pre-graded site. And he had speculated that he'd be willing to do maybe 25 acres in total, and not do any more until that land is absorbed.
Okay.
Hope that helped.
Thank you.
I'd like to move to continue ordinance number 020-5 to the September 16th, 2020 town council agenda.
I second that.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy, second. Any discussion? Mr. Standish, can you take a roll call vote, please?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett. Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson?
So, Mr. Standish, so our record is clear. Councilmember Nicholson held up a sign that it said yes, so our record should reflect that he voted yes.
All right, thank you, Mr. Cohen.
To unmute me, but yes. Yes.
All right. Thank Councilmember you. Pena?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodman?
Yes.
Thank you. Councilmember Solomon?
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield?
Yes. So the motion to continue passed 6-0. We'll go to the, so any future agenda items, Council? Hearing none, I'd like to make a motion to adjourn the regular session. I need a second.
I second that.
Councilmember Jones-Ivey, second. Mr. Standish, roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett. Councilmember Jones-Ivey.
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Yes.
Councilmember Pena.
Yes.
Councilmember Rodman.
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield.
Yes. Okay, the regular session is adjourned. I'd like to take a break until 8 o'clock, and then we'll resume with the study session. So a break until 8 o'clock. Thank you. Okay, we'd like to call the study session to order. Thank you. Mr. Standish, if you would read the first item on the study session.
Discussion regarding a proposed code amendment to the noise abatement standards only for new and specific land use types and separation requirements for convenience uses of the zoning code.
Thank you. Staff report.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Members of the council, good evening. My name is Michael Spaeth. I am the current planning principal planner with the town of Oro Valley. Next slide, please. Mr. Looney, next slide, please. Thank you. The purpose for this item is to discuss a proposed code amendment to the town zoning code. The amendment has two related components. The first is to update the town's noise abatement standards. This component is included on both the town strategic plan and the planning division work plan. In fact, it has been on the planning work plan for some time. The second relates to separation requirements for convenience uses. I'm going to go through each component during my presentation, and please note, we have several development applications awaiting both of these amendments. During my presentation, as I go through both parts, I want to highlight the three primary objectives of the noise code component, which include enabling the ability to address noise impacts in a proactive versus reactive approach, detail how the existing standard is unusable in a one-size-fits-all approach and how the proposed amendment addresses both of those issues, and then also detail how the proposed amendment uses best practices and standards. I'm also going to discuss how each component of the proposed amendment would work in real-world scenarios. I'll cover general plan conformance, and then finally provide a summary to the commission for discussion this evening. Next slide, please. So to start, I'd like to explain why we are here. The town has received several noise complaints regarding outdoor live entertainment over the years at Noble Hops, shown on the screen in the yellow star, near the southeast corner of Lambert Lane and La Cañada Drive. In the process of following up on those complaints, staff realized the existing standard, 40 decibels, is entirely unusable. It is unusable because noise-generating uses like Noble Hops are almost always located next to busy roadways. The baseline background noise in those areas is already higher than the existing 40 decibel threshold, making the standard unenforceable. This realization prompted staff to conduct background research of other Arizona jurisdictions and their noise code standards. That effort made clear that although some were more advanced than our standard, most of them were still deficient in certain ways. With that in mind, staff hired an acoustic engineer, Mr. Lance Willis, who is with us this evening, to help develop a more advanced and thorough standard that addresses the issues we are facing and can serve as a model for other jurisdictions in the future. Next slide, please. To demonstrate in another way how unusable the existing standard is, I've included the image shown on screen. Many of you will recognize that this is the McDonald's drive-thru on the northeast corner of Oracle Road and McGee Road from our site visit. In an effort to take a measurement of the noise generated by the speaker box, the background noise alone was about 68 decibels, if you can make out the number on the meter in the foreground of the image. Again, demonstrating that the background noise for the site is well beyond the existing 40 decibel threshold in the current code. Next slide, please. As was discussed in the staff report, there are several very specific objectives of the first component of the proposed amendment to address these existing issues. Again, those are, the first is that the current standard is an inefficient way of evaluating noise during the design review phase of the project. As opposed to being proactive, it is reactive in the sense that staff has to address potential noise impacts as part of a complaint process after a building or site is developed. The proposed amendment addresses this issue by allowing staff to address noise impacts proactively during the design review phase of the process and identify possible mitigation measures early in the process. Second, the existing code requirement for noise, again, is to not exceed 40 decibels at the property line. This threshold, again, is often less than that baseline background noise present on the site. So it's a standard for commercial uses, which is entirely impractical. Lastly, the standard is a 40 decibel requirement regardless of where the noise is being measured. A one-size-fits-all approach is overly simplistic. A noise standard for gas stations should necessarily not be the same for the standard applied to residential neighborhoods. The standards should take into account things like hours of operation, the type of use, and the location or context of use, all things the current standard omits. Next slide, please. I'd also like to quickly distinguish who these standards would apply to. The proposed amendment would only apply to new noise-generating uses. They would not apply to any use or building already constructed and in use. For purposes of this amendment, noise-generating uses include, among other things, drive-through restaurants, gas stations, auto repair facilities, car washes, and live entertainment venues. Next slide, please. So now that we've established what type of uses these standards would apply to, I'd like to address the first objective, being proactive rather than reactive. Again, the current code is reactive in that the decibel standard is only considered when a complaint is received. Because this standard is unusable, as I mentioned earlier, the Oro Valley Police Department, who responds to these types of nuisance noise complaints, evaluates those complaints based on the existing nuisance noise standards in the town code shown in the box at the bottom of the screen. While this will still be the case for existing uses and buildings, the code amendment again allows staff to be proactive and address the potential noise standards early in the design review phase of the process through a noise study. This would allow us to identify and incorporate mitigation measures early in the process, which could include things like increased setbacks or buffer yards, changing the orientation of the building, or even adding acoustic insulation or things of that nature. Next slide, please. Now with regard to the second objective, you know, earlier we demonstrated just how unusable the existing standard is. So the next question is, well, what is a reasonable standard? To determine this, staff first evaluated the Your Voice, Our Future general plan for guidance regarding balancing economic development goals with the needs of the community. Secondly, as I mentioned earlier, we hired a noise consultant, the first community to do so, to help develop a more thorough and advanced noise standard. Mr. Lance Willis helped develop a standard that is based on the best practices and guidelines of both the federal government as well as international organizations that more precisely measures the various types of noise. And lastly, again, we evaluated other jurisdictions throughout Arizona and California. Next slide, please. So through that analysis of those other jurisdictions, the proposed amendment, as you can see in the third column on the table on the screen, is much more in line with these jurisdictions than the existing standard. These standards are right-sized based, again, on those national and international standards. Staff and Mr. Willis conducted several site visits to evaluate these proposed standards. We visited both a drive-through restaurant and a venue with live music. The new standards are much more reasonable while still protecting adjoining property owners. Next slide, please. Now I'd like to discuss how the amendment addresses the third objective. So the first two columns in the table on the screen now take into account context and time of day, no longer being one-size-fits-all approach. As you can see in the far left column, this represents the land use of the receiving property, while the second column takes into account various time periods throughout the day. The last three columns are standards for different types of noise, using different ways of measuring each. This is a much more thorough and precise way of addressing noise impacts compared to other jurisdictions. Again, these standards would be applicable to new development only, and the table will be again used to help evaluate those new applications as part of a required noise study. Lastly, there are some exemptions from these standards, like emergency vehicles and town events, things of that nature. Ultimately, the proposed amendment, these standards are much more realistic and reasonable. Next slide, please. Now I'd like to quickly demonstrate how the first component, noise abatement, would work. So take, for example, if Noble Hops again, down at Lambert Lane and Lockinetta Drive, shown with the yellow star. Let's say that was a new use, and it was in the design review phase of the project development. A noise code study would be required as part of that design review. In that study, the applicant, Noble Hops, would have to demonstrate that the anticipated noise from live entertainment and others would meet the noise standards shown in the table on the previous slide. As an example, I've pulled the maximum allowed decibels for the one-hour average for the nearby land uses. These levels are for the 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. time frame. If the use exceeded these limits or any others in the table, the design would have to implement mitigation measures to meet these requirements. As you can see, for the single-family residential shown in red, that requirement would be 50 decibels, and for the adjoining commercial to the west and across Lambert Lane in the blue, that requirement would be 65 decibels. Next slide, please. Now for part two of the proposed code amendment, convenience use separation. First, I'd like to cover what is a convenience use. It's defined in the code as a use by which the method of operation produces a moderate or high level of traffic and impacts on surrounding uses. Those uses typically include things like gas stations, drive-through restaurants, car washes, and convenience markets or Circle K's, things of that nature. So these uses by code have separation requirements from certain other uses as shown on the screen. First, they must be a minimum of 250 feet from any residential property. Secondly, they must be a minimum of 500 feet from any school or park. While these separation requirements are necessary, in some situations they may prove to be redundant. Next slide, please. This is where the second component of the proposed code amendment comes in. In certain instances, they may be redundant when major barriers exist between two uses. Major barriers include things like arterial intersections, existing buildings or future buildings between the two uses, or hillsides or other topographical features of that nature. So typically, these major barriers inherently diminish the potential impacts, including noise impacts, visual impacts, lighting, and odor. The existence of these barriers can make the separation requirements redundant. The proposed amendment allows town council to consider these major barriers to determine if a reduction in the separation requirements could be appropriate. Any reduction will necessarily need to consider a balance between flexibility and protecting neighbors. Next slide, please. Now for a scenario for the second component. Let's say a drive-thru is proposed on the corner in a commercial area as shown on the screen. Across the intersection from a school, approximately 225 feet away. Everyone's familiar with the typical impacts generated by a fast food restaurant, including noise from an outdoor speaker, odor impacts, or visual impacts from a vehicle stacking in a drive-thru. So in this scenario, on the surface, the separation requirements might seem appropriate. However, as you can see demonstrated on the screen, the intersection, in this case, Oracle Road, is a large arterial roadway, in fact, a state highway, between the two properties. So what might the real impacts be? Effectively, there won't be any impacts, considering the existing impact of the arterial intersection. So with this in mind, in this scenario, a reduction in separation requirements might be appropriate. Next slide, please. The proposed code amendments support a number of Your Voice, Our Future general plan goals and policies, including those focused on expanding economic activity while balancing the needs of neighbors, as shown on the screen. Next slide, please. The proposed amendment was considered by the Planning and Zoning Commission in June and July of this year. The focus of the discussion was on providing more information on how the proposed amendment would work and to provide a better understanding of what decibel increases really means. Ultimately, the Commission has recommended approval of the proposed amendments. Next slide, please. So in summary, the first part of the proposed code amendment addresses several objectives that fix current issues with the existing noise standard in the code. Those include establishing a proactive as opposed to reactive approach to dealing with noise-generating uses. It eliminates the unusable existing standard that is no longer one-size-fits-all. The amendment takes into account context and time of day, making it a more reasonable and enforceable requirement. Further, it addresses an item on both the town's strategic plan and planning division work plan and uses best practices of both the federal and international standards used throughout the country. The second part of the proposed amendment provides some flexibility for convenience uses while maintaining a balance for neighboring property owners. The proposed amendments are in conformance with the Your Voice, Our Future general plan. The Planning and Zoning Commission has recommended approval. And as a reminder, Mr. Mayor, this item is for discussion only. That concludes my presentation. As I stated, Mr. Lance Willis is also here to answer questions as needed. Thank you.
Thank you for the reminder, Mr. Spaeth. An excellent presentation. So to our audience that's here this evening with us, this is your opportunity if you would like to make a comment or ask a question relative to this study session agenda item. So I'll give you a moment to raise your hand. This would typically be the blue card, but for Zoom purposes, you would raise your hand if you would like to make a comment or ask a question. Okay, seeing none, we'll open it up to council for questions.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for the extremely detailed work. I have a question. For example, Noble Hops. So the dB reading of the traffic noise was in the 60-something range. Yet they have about a 55 decibel. What I'm getting at is if noise from the road is, say, 65 dB, if they were playing music, it would have to be above the 65 dB level in order to be heard over the street noise. At least if the street noise is 65 dB measured at the distance from the street to where the music would be played. So I guess I don't quite understand how this will work. For example, if there's 65 dB already at that location, how do you play music to be able to be heard over that and not be in violation with the neighboring properties? Is it the inverse square law? Is it because of the distance? Is that basically what we're looking at?
Sure, Mayor and Councilmember Solomon, and I could certainly ask if you wouldn't mind to have Mr. Lance Willis unmuted as well, because I know he can certainly add some detail here. So the 68 decibel reading that we found was during, you know, evening kind of rush hour periods, morning rush hour periods, right? So I wouldn't expect that that road kind of baseline road noise was going to be the same threshold at 10 p.m. as it is at 6 p.m., right? And so the point of bringing up the road noise nuance is that to try and hold all businesses throughout the entirety of a day, regardless of where you are, to a standard that is already lower than what road noise is completely unenforceable. And honestly, to us, it's effectively not a requirement. It's, you literally can't enforce it. And so if I could, if you wouldn't mind, Mr. Lance Willis can maybe provide a little bit more detail, because there are some adjustments in his, there is the inverse right that I don't, I certainly tap in on his expertise, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. Yeah, this is Dr. Willis. The sound pressure level limits that are in the code are based on what is typically acceptable in areas where the background noise level is not interfering with the measurement, is not particularly significant. We have a requirement in the code that a background noise level correction be made to any measurement of a sound source under investigation. Okay. And if the background noise level is higher than what is produced by the sound source of interest, then obviously you can't do the measurement and you can't enforce that. So we have sound pressure level limits. However, they are subject to change if the background noise level in that area is higher.
Okay. A quick follow-up to that then. Let's say, for example, the residential area by Noble Hops, we have the distance separation. If 55, if I think it was, I don't recall if it was 50 or 55 dB was the acceptable level, then is it that if Noble Hops is generating enough sound to go above that level at the residence, or do you look at, if the traffic noise is, say, 60 at that location, the traffic's in violation of the noise ordinance, but technically not, because this only applies to new uses. If there's a band playing and you pick up 60 decibels at that single family location, is that now a violation from Noble Hops by having a band and music there?
So, Mayor, Member Solomon, so effectively it would, right? So now keep in mind, it's only for new uses. So I'm using a new Noble Hops as the example, not the existing one, right? So when they came in and they did a noise study, that live entertainment is a conditional use. So it would be associated with a conditional use permit. And so that noise study would effectively be a condition of that conditional use permit. And if they demonstrated as part of that review that they could meet those standards, but now they're not meeting them, then the process would be, we would work with them to try and figure out ways to now have them become compliant. And if they couldn't, ultimately you could have to reconsider the conditional use permit. So...
No, and like I said, it's an incredibly complex, detailed problem and study, and I'm sure that as time goes on and it's enforced, we'll learn
the nuances of what's working, what's not working. So, and it is an amazing piece of work. But my last question then is, I'm in a single family home. I believe a neighbor's violating the noise ordinance because they got a party going on. I call the police, police come. Are the police going to use the dB levels that are in the new ordinance, even though technically it's, quote, not a new use?
Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, they would not. And that was specific conversations that we had with the legal department that wanted to keep these types of measurements separate on purpose. No. What the police department would be relying on is the nuisance noise standards in the town code that talk about, you know, unreasonable noise to a regular person, those types of standards. So they would not be looking at these standards, no.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Other questions? So I have a question, Mr. Spaeth, and I'm sorry, I forgot the Dr. Lance, is it? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So I want to use, I noted page 11. So it's the Noble Hops page that shows the decibels for commercial, multifamily, and single family. And I understand this is for new, but I just want to use this to try to, the background noise correction that has been talked about this evening. Of course, the dB levels are going to vary on Lambert Lane, La Cañada, at different times of the day. Right? I mean, that's kind of a given.
Yes.
It's going to be noisier at certain times and then quieter at other times. But in terms of the background noise correction, and let's just say this was a new Noble Hops, I think you referred to it as, and we were to do these noise measurements from the receiving property boundaries of the multifamily at 55, the commercial at 65, single family at 50. How can you explain the background noise correction? Does that change the receiving level of noise because of that compensation that's being made for the background noise?
Mayor Winfield, if you don't mind, I'm going to let Dr. Willis answer that.
Sure. That's right. Essentially, what we're doing is if we go out to the site and we do a measurement, we're measuring everything that's just making sound. That'll be the sound source of interest, and it'll be the background noise level. So that's what we call the ambient sound pressure level. If we can, we want to turn off the source that we're investigating and do a second measurement of just the background noise level. Having those two pieces of data, we can subtract the energy of the background noise from the ambient noise level and come up with the sound pressure level produced just by the source of interest. So that will have the effect of lowering the measurement of the ambient sound pressure level. And the amount it gets lower dependent on the level of background noise.
Okay, so Dr. Willis, if I'm living at this multifamily residence, and I'm familiar with the noise ordinance, and that 55 decibels is the level of noise that is acceptable. Does this background noise correction increase that 55 decibels that can be received into this multifamily area?
It can increase the allowable sound pressure level if the background noise level is high enough.
So this ordinance that we're looking to pass, so does staff have the, who has the expertise then to implement this or to, evaluate what's acceptable. Or let's just say we have this new Noble Hops. They have live music. They've met the requirements, but still we're getting complaints from the multifamily area because of the noise. We just simply say, well, they've met the requirements of the ordinance, and so even though it's a nuisance to you, it's an acceptable nuisance. Is that the bottom line?
Mayor Winfield, I mean, I would, so to your first part of that question is who has the expertise to do that? So if a noise study comes in that you know, we're looking at as part of the design review process, the code amendment has language in there allowing us, the PZA, to reach out to a acoustic engineer professional to be able to evaluate that based off of somebody that we hire to double check whether that their calculations are appropriate. Have they taken into account all of the specifics? And Mr. and Dr. Willis has put together a lengthy technical bulletin as well that, if approved, would kind of run concurrent with this amendment that describes how a noise study is supposed to be put together in a lot of detail that I honestly can't relay to you, to be fair. But so ultimately, that's how we would evaluate whether a noise amendment or a noise study, excuse me, is appropriate or not.
It's appropriate. And then so part of that design review would identify mitigation measures that would need to be made, and that might be the placement of the speakers or sound barrier material inside the structure itself, or maybe the orientation of the building. And all of those mitigation measures in theory are addressing potential noise concerns. Is that?
Yes, sir. Yes, it is. Correct. Yep.
And so we do our best on the front end, and then the our police department takes care of the complaints on the back end.
Well, so, you know, again, in this hypothetical that we're using, if there's a new Noble Hops, if there's a conditional use permit that's approved with these particular noise study standards as a condition of the CUP, you could bring it back before council and revisit it and say, well, wait a minute. What you said you're going to do isn't happening, or the mitigation measures you've put in doesn't seem to be adequate enough.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Other questions?
Yes. Mr. Mayor, I have a question.
Member Jones-Ivey.
Michael, I'm taking a look at that last slide that you had, the part one noise abatement scenario. And as I look at the different structures, these are all below, above the 40. Is not all of this, these structures that I'm looking at, they come under the 40, is that right, currently?
Yes, Mayor, Member Jones-Ivey, yes, that's the standard. So, okay, so keep in mind the existing standard is for amplified music at a commercial use, mm-hmm. something of that nature. So, we don't actually have a standard right now that applies to residential. We don't have a standard that applies to multifamily. The 40 only applies to non-residential uses in certain types of sound. So we don't have a standard at the moment.
Okay. All right. So essentially, we haven't solved the issue with Noble Hops and the surrounding neighbors. Is that right with this new noise abatement ordinance?
Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivey, that's correct. It does not address that particular scenario. But we have been working with Noble Hops to try and find ways to find middle ground to try and address the issue.
Okay. And with them having, what did you call it, a conditional use permit?
Mm-hmm.
What would be the dBs that they would be allowed for a band?
For a new use? Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so that table that was on table 25.1A that is actually in the code amendment are the standards that would apply. And so if you were a new Noble Hops as a commercial use, you would be able to do, as a one-hour average, 65 decibels.
A 65, okay. Is that the highest that...
So keep in mind, again, we have the three columns for measuring different types of,
right, and sound, yes.
Yeah, the different types. So it's this commercial office institutional row, the fourth row down. So they have different dB levels that they would have to meet for different types of sound. So,
okay.
Does that answer your question? And so again, keeping in mind that, like on our site tour, the background noise that we experienced was about 65, right? So you can use your mind's eye to kind of envision that, okay, Noble Hops in the future has to come up with mitigation measures, whatever that might be, to try and make sure they're compliant with this tape.
Okay, but at this point, they don't have to because they're not new.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, all right.
But we are trying to find other ways to help remedy that situation.
Okay, thank you.
So, Mr. Spaeth, one more question. Again, I'm going to refer to the PowerPoint, page 11, that has the various commercial, single-family, multifamily, and then the star where Noble Hops is. Of course, that entire building where Noble Hops is a commercial building. So it would be the 65... decibels, is that correct?
Mayor Winfield, that's correct, yes.
And Noble Hops and others, they share a common wall with another tenant, yes, and I don't know who that is next door to Noble Hops. It might be a nail salon.
A salon of some sort, correct, yes.
Yeah. So they would, both Noble Hops and the nail salon at that shared wall, that's where they would measure sound so that it would have to be no more than 65 decibels. Is that correct?
Mayor Winfield, that is correct, yes.
Okay. And so if it exceeded that, and if this were a new, then they would have to do something to mitigate that so that the neighboring tenant didn't hear their activity, whatever it was, that exceeded 65 decibels.
Erwood, that's correct. Yes. Yep. And so whether that's orienting where the speakers of the live entertainment are or putting in acoustic insulation, things of that nature, certainly would have to demonstrate their conformance. And I would also like to point out, too, in balancing these proposed standards, the existing 40 decibel requirement for commercial uses, as I've said, is literally unusable. And so from a business perspective, the proposed standards in the amendment help in that scenario because future Noble Hops, future businesses wouldn't be held to the 40 anymore, which we've learned is obviously hard to enforce.
So one just quick follow-up with a band. I mean, it's not just noise, but there's also the vibration.
Mm-hmm.
How is that addressed? Or
It is, Mayor Winfield, thank you. So, and then again, I can certainly turn to Dr. Willis here, but Mr. Lunny, if you'd like to go to the slide with the table on it, it's the next one up, slide 10. Please. While he's getting there. So again, we've got the three different columns that are designed to, well, if you can follow along in your notes, Mayor, I guess.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Okay, thank you. The three different columns, again, represent different types of sound. So Dr. Willis, if you wouldn't mind, can you just kind of briefly summarize the three categories here, specifically with that kind of deep vibrating bass that Mayor asked about?
Sure. Right. So when we talk about vibration, we're talking about a physical sensation, not hearing, but the movement of a physical object that is generally in contact with your body, or is a motion of a structure, which is not heard, but it is this vibration transmitted through a structure. This code doesn't address vibration, vibration through ground from train tracks vibrating a building. We don't address that type of vibration. What we do address in the column furthest to the right, the 1 minute limits, those are for the low frequency octave bands, 16 hertz, 31.5 hertz, and 63 hertz. Low frequency acoustical energy can induce vibration and rattle in windows and doors and cabinets and things like that. So we're looking specifically at those octave bands to detect if acoustically induced vibration is likely to occur. So in that sense, we address vibration transmitted via an acoustical wave through the air. We do not look at vibration transmitted through a structure or through the ground. And as far as the middle column goes, the maximum sound pressure level limits, those are a much shorter term measurement of sound pressure level. We have a 1 hour average type of measurement and equivalent continuous sound pressure level measurement. If sound only occurs for a brief period during that hour span, it may have a very high sound pressure level, but not exceed the 1 hour average limits. So we have set a maximum sound pressure level based on a fast exponential time-weighted sound pressure. And what that means is we are doing a running average over 125 milliseconds as defined by ANSI-S 1.4 for sound level meters. So essentially that puts an upper limit on that you're never allowed to exceed. So we're looking at, first of all, an average level of what's being produced over an hour in time. We're setting an upper level limit on that through the maximum sound pressure level limit. And then we're looking at acoustically induced vibration, essentially, in the third column. But also, low-frequency sound goes through walls much easier, and we want to have a metric in there that's also useful for detecting, especially in the case if you have a amplified sound with a subwoofer. We want to look at that specifically and make sure that we're not creating sound pressure levels inside someone's house, that because those frequencies can easily go through a wall. And it is much more accurate to look at it this way as opposed to an A-weighted broadband sound pressure level that includes all frequencies, and where the low frequency band is highly attenuated by the A-weighting filter. Maybe that's more detail than you needed, but that's why we look at that. There's many aspects to the human perception of sound, and we want to make sure that we have something that's comprehensive that catches these edge cases, because in my line of work, that causes the most problems. It's sounds that are not really addressed by most noise ordinances, yet are extremely common, like impulsive sound. And it becomes very difficult for people that are subjected to those sounds to get any recognition that there's a problem.
Yeah.
But the other thing that we want to do is we want to have this comprehensive evaluation process in place so that we go through this up front. And so someone that's planning to start a business can plan for this and do their due diligence. And once they've gone through this process, then they have some reasonable expectation that they're not going to be subjected to a lot of noise complaints later on, once they've got out of the capitalization phase of their startup.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Willis. Council, any other questions?
Joe, Mayor?
Yes, Council Member Nicholson?
I got a couple. So one of the issues I have is, we're talking about having to have businesses do a study before they even open a business, which we're always trying to help businesses out in Oro Valley. Do we know what kind of cost this is, how hard it is, roughly? I mean, I have no idea how much that would cost or how long it takes or how much it delays.
Mayor Winfield, Council Member Nicholson. Mr. Willis, do you mind answering that?
Sure. These studies are commonly done. It is going to depend a lot on how many sound sources are on the site, what type of business it is. It would be obviously different for a restaurant compared to an asphalt plant, for example, where you have a lot of heavy equipment, a lot of activity going on. But you can probably expect maybe somewhere between $2,000 and $5,000 to look at this.
Okay. And so, Mike, a restaurant that wants to open up and have like a live band outside, that's going to be something that they have to do for a special use permit, correct?
Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson. So, they would have to do it as part of a conditional use permit. Yes.
Oh well. I know we talk about Noble Hops a lot, and maybe we shouldn't use that name or new Noble Hops. But what are the complaints have we had, and like have we delved into what kind of, like when someone complains, or is it someone over playing a piano or a cello that's 80 decibels, or is it someone that's using a acoustic guitar, but they got hooked up to a mic and they keep turning up the temperature, the sound over and over again. Like, I would want to know a little bit more of details of when the complaints come in. Is it just the one location, or is it multiple locations? And, and if it is more restaurants, I want to know more or less, can we narrow it down to a certain type of thing that they are doing, and then not having to have to do a $2,000-$5,000 study to open up a business, but just like, look, you can do pianos, you can do, amplified type of music or something like that, where it's a little simpler, but it's, maybe not so cost prohibitive for a business, and more, more concrete too. Like, look, you can do these type of instruments outside because this is, or non-amplified music, or do we have details just on the complaints itself when people go over there?
Mayor Winfield, Council Member Nicholson, we do. And so we've had complaints from Noble Hops. We've had other complaints from, I won't say the business name either, but a fast food restaurant where their speaker box sound was traveling at night, at certain hours at night, and we had complaints for folks about that as well. And the challenge becomes, most of these uses are conditional uses, and so they're having to go through the conditional use process anyway, which requires, traffic impact statements, because traffic can be an issue for a lot of these uses. They might be having to do odor abatement, evaluations to try and address potential impacts from odor abatement as well. So we don't necessarily see it as too divergent from some of those things that they will already be doing as part of a conditional use permit process. And it's not most uses. It is just literally those noise generating uses. So a significant percentage of uses in commercial and retail and tech park office development areas aren't going to having to be doing these types of studies. It's just those that we know generate noise that could possibly have an impact on neighboring properties. So
do you think there's a way to maybe narrow it down to certain types of things like outdoor music? And also too, I worry about like just the enforcement. Like you're talking about having to have an engineer go over there. Like we can't have an officer with a little microphone thing to be like, oh yeah, you're a little loud. And then who also gets charged the fee? Is it the tenant that's staying there, or is it the landlord that's renting the unit? But enforcement's kind of the one big thing. Like if we have to hire a guy with a first name doctor on it to go out there to enforce it for us. I imagine it gets kind of cost prohibitive as well, too. I mean, there's no sense having laws if it's cost prohibitive to even enforce them, I guess. But
yeah, I mean, again, you know, hopefully we're addressing those things early on in the process, and those studies are actually being done accurately and correctly. We hope that that's being done so that, you know, to Dr. Willis's point, when they get through that phase, they get their potential approval to go forth and build, they can have that assurance to some degree that they've satisfied those requirements. But sure, I'm certainly open to recommendations if there's parameters you want to, council wants to try and add to the amendment. But back to your point, you know, the nuance between whether you're doing piano or acoustic music or live music from an enforcement perspective is very challenging to actually do.
Yeah. So
I see Mr. Vella with his hand raised. It looks like he needs to be unmuted. Okay, Mr. Vella, would you like to chime in?
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I would. I just wanted to point out that a couple of things. One is that we tried a very simplistic approach. That's what we have today. And there's so many different scenarios that a simplistic approach breaks down very quickly. So we're looking at using, again, more of a tried and true approach that's been used in the Phoenix area and the California area. So we're trying not to repeat a prior mistake of creating a very simplistic approach, because it harms people in unintended ways. Right now, Noble Hops has to meet a 40 decibel standard because we did that very thing, tried to create a very simplistic approach. So that's one point. And the second point I want to make very briefly is that because of the pre-design that Mr. Space described, when we do get a complaint in terms of music or a complaint about a drive-through speaker being too loud, more often than not, the fix is going to be very simple. More often than not, the problem is that it's human error. Someone turned the sound dial up too high. So the fix is very simple. You know, talking to the manager of the fast food place is to say, hey, it needs to be turned down. So I'm not seeing the need for every enforcement action as far as a conditional use permit to go out and hire a PhD to go out there and tell us that is what needs to be done. So I'm confident that we would not be in that position relative to enforcement. Now let's talk very briefly about things that would not be subject to a conditional use permit. So if it's not subject to a conditional use permit, it's, you know, a business that goes in, there are sound issues, or an existing business with sound issues, that's going to be enforced by the police using our nuisance law. And that requires a judgment call. And the position the town does not want to be in is to ask officers to be out there who are not trained, wonderfully trained in so many areas, but just not in sound measurements. Because you need a very specific means and method to do that to be able to prove to a court. And frankly, in terms of, we do not want to be in the position of potentially being at court and going back and forth of whether or not the meter was correct. So that's why those types of uses would be used, addressed through nuisance law and the judgment of an officer, not an officer using a meter. So, you know, I want to impart that we're doing our best to try to balance more usable approach. We are sensitive to the cost issues, so we're really narrowing the band of uses that would be subject to this to the ones that are typically problems. And the idea is to preempt problems so enforcement is that much cleaner and easier and simplistic. So, thank you, Mayor.
I think Councilmember Nicholson is not quite done, and then we'll go to Councilmember Rodman.
Sorry, so we do the study, they get approved based on where they place the speakers or what they're doing, and then after the fact, if there are complaints after we approve everything and they put in the restaurant, they put out the band, and there becomes complaints, what's the process from that point? And sorry, Bill, I'll cut you.
Thank you, Mayor. Member Nicholson. So to Mr. Vela's point, the first part of the process is to reach out to the manager, reach out to the owner, and see if it's a human error issue. That's the first step. If maybe that's not the case, then we can try and work with them to see if there are other mitigation measures that we can put in, whether that's acoustic insulation inside a building, or if it's outside, maybe it's additional landscaping somewhere, or you're reorienting where the speakers are located. Or I know they have, through this process I learned from Dr. Willis, they have sound walls that you can erect outside, kind of behind where speakers are, so that you can limit, kind of that, what direction the noise is going. So we're going to do everything on our end to try and find a resolution to try and mitigate the issue before it has to come back. The ultimate is that it would have to come back before council, possibly, and we'd have to reevaluate the conditional use. One of the precursors of a conditional use permit is that you're not violating the conditions of a conditional use permit. And that's one of them, right? So, but we're going to do everything we can on staff side to try and find a resolution without having to get to that. But that would be the ultimate step. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and at that point, we're kind of asking. We have no legal ground to make them do anything, though, to get below certain threshold.
No, actually, Mayor, Member Nicholson, when you're reconsidering a conditional use permit, you're reconsidering whether the use is allowed or not.
Okay.
So, no, yeah, absolutely, we have the ability to say, you're not doing X, you need to go do Y and Z to make sure that you're doing what you promised. And yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thanks.
Councilmember Rodman?
Yes, again, thank you, Michael and Dr. Willis, and Byer to perhaps taking us out to see this in real life. It seems to me, I know I got caught in the enforcement side of it as well when I was talking out there on site, but that's not really what this is. This is the preventative part. So if we do our job right when a new use comes in, so that it will meet the requirements of the noise ordinance, then we don't have any enforcement. Or if we do, it is, wait a minute, what are you doing something new? Do you all of a sudden have a 16-piece orchestra instead of a trio? I mean, what's going on that you made? Either that, or we could have made a mistake in approving it to begin with, maybe. I mean, it's possible. But if we do that right, then the enforcement part should be few and far between for any new use. It doesn't fix old uses, existing uses. And we had that conversation again on site about what do we do for an existing use that could have a higher decibel level under the new ordinance, but doesn't because it's an old ordinance. That's a whole other issue which we can deal with later. But I think, you know, once I got the understanding that this is new and this is preventative, then I think it made all the sense in the world to me to have something that says, okay, we know how to do this. It's not just somebody putting their hand on the rock and looking up at the sky and saying this is okay. We've got real things to go with before they put the insulation in, before they figure out what kind of roof they're going to put on or whatever the different things are, rather than telling them later, you got to rip all this out because it doesn't give you enough sound to make it. So that, it's not really a question, Mr. Mayor, but that took me a while to get there. And now I think I got it.
Thank you. Any additional questions or stories of getting there? Okay, hearing none, Mr. Spaeth, thank you. Dr. Willis, Mr. Vela, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Our study session is adjourned. Everybody have a good evening.
Thank you.
Thanks. Great, thanks.